I think is a very essential element as we look at both everyday practice as well as emergency preparedness. What I want to take the time to address are really two basic objectives, and that is to briefly go through what are the current realities with respect to infection prevention and practice today, and then what are the competencies then, understanding what our realities are, what are the competencies that we need to look at regarding infection prevention among hospital-based personnel. Well, if we look at what our current systems are, there was an excellent review by Clevins and colleagues earlier this year in actually outlining and again just validating the impact of infection that we have in healthcare today. Although these results were from 2002, they continue to demonstrate the same results that we've had that have been reiterated over and over for at least the last 15 years regarding the impact, the incidence of infection in healthcare facilities today. And as you can see, this crosses really all ages, all settings, or all particular specialties within a healthcare facility, including well baby nurseries where you wouldn't expect to see infections, up to the areas that you would expect to see infection in the intensive care unit, and then outside intensive care units as individuals recuperate and are prepared for going home. The actual incidence, and all of us have struggled in public health, especially recently with MRSA, and showing that MRSA, a multi-drug resistant Staph aureus, continues to be a problem. This was the review done by the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology through the Research Foundation that really showed that we're seeing MRSA, this one multi-drug resistant organism, at a prevalence that is 8 to 11 times greater than what we already know or what we have expected. This was a broad scope review that had participants from all 50 states, over 1,200 healthcare facilities, and what they did was simply report the incidence of MRSA in their facility during a given month across the U.S. And what we found was that there were a significant number of infections in the medical units, but also that we had a number of infections. 37% were MRSA among skin and soft tissue infection, which kind of lended us and moved us toward what we are seeing in the community. So what we have here then is infection that we have not only in the hospital, but in the community, and that we're seeing transmission both in the community and in healthcare facilities. We saw an article in JAMA just a month or so ago where the CDC estimated that we have 94,000 cases of MRSA in the U.S. that occurred during 2005. We had not only invasive disease, but also community disease, and then 3% where we were not sure whether it was associated with healthcare or in the community. And the reason that this becomes important is that we are seeing then infection as an increasingly important player in public health, that now we are seeing that the number exceed the cases of any reportable, notifiable disease. We also are seeing then that the number is higher than any of the top 10 or within the top 10 now of those attributable to our causes of death in the U.S. So certainly healthcare-associated infection is an issue. It is a problem in day-to-day practice. We also know that it's a problem in, or the same issues that we have to talk about in terms of prevention activities in day-to-day practice are those same kinds of activities that we need to have concern when we are thinking about what type of emergency preparedness training do we need to provide for our healthcare workers. So the questions really are, do our healthcare workers know what to do in order to prevent infection transmission? Clearly, these studies show that we haven't certainly haven't mastered that as far as our care practices. And are the activities that prevent infection in healthcare really different from those activities that we will need to address infection prevention during an emergency? Do we need to do anything differently during an emergency than we do day to day? And many, I think, will say probably not. And if healthcare facilities can't adequately address the day-to-day prevention activities, will we be able then to address those activities? Should we expect a different response if we're looking at our care during the time of a disaster or some other type of emergency? So we know that the way we deal with healthcare-associated infection has been a long-standing problem, one which we have dealt with very unsuccessfully, and it continues to be a risk to patients and healthcare workers and the community at large. And part of the issue is that we, at the present time, have no single criterion standard to address the core competencies, or what are those basic levels of knowledge that all healthcare worker need to have and be able to demonstrate in order to prevent the transmission of infection. So we have ongoing gaps in our ability to consistently provide preventive measures in avoiding healthcare-associated infection transmission, and therefore we have a significant risk in our being able then to address a higher level of response in the time of an emergency. So basically, if we can't do and can't practice well every day, can we then ramp up and can we respond during the time of an emergency? So our thought is that certainly we need to look at this more through a different lens, and we need to try to identify and ensure that we have standardized and basic foundational competencies and the activities that are associated with those competencies, recognizing that if you have some kind of foundation, then you certainly can build. When doing this, we need to understand that there are some basic principles in developing these kind of competencies. Certainly understanding that we need to make them relevant to the healthcare professional so that these competencies are based on the jobs that they do every day, and that there is an understanding and a recognition that we're going to teach you and build on and determine the relevance to your day-to-day practices. We also then have to understand, as we're developing those competencies, that we've got a lot of differences in our generations in how they are learning and how they are accepting information. And so those competencies have to also be addressed then to cross the ages, because we know the ages of our healthcare workers are quite different. Those that are entering healthcare at a very young age, and then those of us that have been around for a year or two. So in terms of competency, well, what is a competency? And it's actually, there's some very clear definitions of what competencies are. And it's really an individual measure of applied skills and knowledge that enables somebody to perform their work. It consists of, a competency statement consists of a verb to tell you what you were supposed to do or what is the observable or measurable performance. There's some sort of content, what it involves, the type of performance and the specific task, and then the context in which that activity is going to be applied, and that generally is often the work environment or the limitations of that work environment. So it basically focuses on what is required of the personnel in the workplace rather than on the learning process. And it really embodies the individual then to apply and then transfer that knowledge. So when we think of that, we think of, well, we want them to be able to apply their knowledge today and then be able to transfer that knowledge so they can apply it in a different setting, for example, during the time of an emergency. So it's really an integration then of their knowledge, skills, attitude, and the judgment that is expected of that particular practitioner. So what we have done is really initiated a process where we did a very extensive literature review, drafted a set of core competencies, and then the activities that are associated with those competencies, which we have termed terminal objectives. And that once these were compiled, all pulled together, then we also then worked to identify a group of experts. These are experts in healthcare practice, with also some demonstrated expertise in infection prevention and control. We did not want to get infection control professionals to be the ones to determine these activities, because previous experience had been that they kind of want everybody to be a mini infection control professional, and that's not really what we wanted. We wanted to identify the knowledge of the actual frontline healthcare worker. So we gathered together those experts, invited them to participate as part of the Delphi panel, and then began an iterative process where we took the competency statements and the associated activities or terminal objectives, and then sent them in an iterative process for them to wordsmith and identify gaps and so forth, so we could come up then with a final document. And then after that, that will be the goal then and the foundation for developing training materials, so that we could then provide specific types of training for different levels of healthcare personnel. These categories of healthcare personnel included nurses, physicians, nursing assistants, laboratorians, ancillary staff, which would include people that had minimal contact but some contact with the patient. It could be clergy, food service workers, social workers, etc. So we wanted to identify what was the knowledge, what are the knowledge and skills needed by these personnel to prevent infection transmission, and then develop the training materials that would go along with that. And understanding then that if we kind of think back to the multi-generational issue, we know that the types of materials needed to train individuals certainly varies greatly. For example, if you tell me something that, how do you want to learn, then I'm going to tell you probably give me a PowerPoint slide, put 6 or 8 bullet points on it, and I'll be pretty fine. If you take someone that may be in their 30s, they may like something a little bit more interactive. And then if you think in terms of our 19 and 20-year-olds, they are very, very used to a lot of stimulation, and they may want to learn and need to learn in a totally different manner. So how do we incorporate then not only this knowledge, this information, but also put it in place into a format that will be accepted by the learner? Therefore, we'll know that we'll need to have a number of different avenues in terms of sharing this information, including things like games and worksheets, pictures, posters, video clips, even podcasts, and other such perhaps interactive type of exercises. The next step as we move forward, and I'll share then these competencies with you momentarily, but as we work then ahead, our goal will be to try to not only disseminate this, but make sure that it is translated, not, I don't mean into other languages, but into other disciplines. So that means we are moving then these competencies into nursing, in working with respiratory therapy societies and their professional organizations, looking at those organizations that train housekeepers, environmental services supervisors, so we can impact not only day-to-day training, but also move in into academia. We have a number of strategic partners that are working with us on this project, including the Infection Control World, which is APIC, and then the Society for Healthcare Epidemiologists of America, the CDC, and others. Kind of one example that kind of relates it to the whole idea of emergency preparedness is thinking in terms of how we provide and how we can share information. This is just an example of a human patient simulator that's been intubated, and the endotracheal tube is packed with GloGerm, a fluorescent powder. And then we're able then to use these types of training processes to be able to demonstrate to healthcare workers how respiratory particles are dispersed during a human cough. So we can show them the impact of working with a patient that is potentially infectious, what it means to them not only personally, so we can use that as a way of talking to them about the use of protective equipment, but we can also then talk about, well, how does a patient like this, an infectious patient, potentially impact the environment? So we can then work with our housekeepers, environmental services staff, to be able to go through how you should appropriately approach an environment and help them understand that you may know how to clean your house, but because you clean your house one way, that doesn't mean that you necessarily use those same practices when you are cleaning a healthcare environment. So incorporating these kind of visual components as well as our traditional type of lecture, other type of materials. If you're interested in looking at that, I wanted to make sure that you have the availability to actually see a short video that demonstrates this cough and the use of protective equipment and the impact of the environment. You can go to the website noted at the bottom where the red arrow shows. It's apic-ky.org. And then on that front page, you'll be able actually to find two videos. One is the cough simulation, and then we have just added another one, which is an environmental component where you can show then the impact, also using fluorescent powder, the impact of environmental contamination, and we use that then to demonstrate to housekeeping personnel the importance of the role they play in cleaning the patient environment, and then offers you a way of assessing the effectiveness of their cleaning, also using a fluorescent powder. So that's apic-ky.org. And then those, both of the videos are actually housed on YouTube, so you can view them right from that website. In addition, we have, and I think there is a handout with this additional information, we've developed a web-based training module that just talks about how diseases are transmitted. And this module is available on the Train Network. It's KentuckyTrain.org for the website to access this. The course ID number is noted there. It's a free unit that will provide contact hours for not only nursing but also physicians. It's very self-paced. There are a number video clips that are loaded in there to, again, give that visual demonstration. There are pop-up documents and resources as well. But, again, these are just some examples of some of these particular training materials that may be of assistance in doing competency-based training. I think we can hit the escape button. Yeah, there we go. And then I think I can show you the... In the chair in the back was the current, it's version 13, so I defy superstition. I'm going to give you version 13 of this that actually shows the latest iteration of these the competency document that shows not only the cluster area of competency, but the statement itself, and then the terminal objectives, or those measurable activities. There are a total of 7 competency statements. The Delphi process actually is in the last round, evaluating this last statement and the last 2 terminal objectives, in hopes that we will have then a final document to be able to disseminate. We are working then with some from the academic side of nursing to actually take this back and to try to determine how can we take this information and perhaps weave it into the curriculum so that our nurses will then graduate from their programs with some measure of infection prevention knowledge, and that this will help then healthcare facilities as well. If they know that no matter where you have elected to work as nurses and other healthcare workers move from hospital to hospital or different healthcare organizations, that if we've approached this through a competency-based training, that as they move place to place, that there should be some measure of comfort then that each individual will have some basic knowledge. And then if we are confronted with an emergency situation, as we try to work on our ramp-up training, then again, we can go back to having an understanding of what is the basic knowledge and what are the skills that most of our healthcare workers should have, and then that will allow us then to know where we, what our starting point is then with any kind of emergency preparedness training that would be needed based upon that particular situation.